MediTalk with Dr. Ross Walker.
Good afternoon, Dr. Ross Walker. Welcome back from your break.
Thank you very much, Brent. How are you, Mike?
I'm well, and I Googled where you stayed, and it looked very, very nice.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a lovely place. I'll give it a plug, the Byron at Byron in Byron Bay. It's just one of my favourite places in Australia. It's fantastic.
I said to my wife, you know, we've got a bit of time off over Christmas, a week, and that we can get away. And I said to her, why don't we try and go there? Well, no luck. You can't get in there until, I think, the end of February or something like that.
It's fully booked. You've got to book months ahead, unfortunately. It's set on 40 acres of rainforest. It's just beautiful.
Okay, let's talk all things medical.
Yep.
Lots to get through today, so let's get stuck into it. Some listeners' emails and questions. Now, I've sent them to you. We'll go to Billy's first. Billy says, can you ask Dr. Ross Walker when you get a chance to discuss the progress for managing atrial fibrillation?
Yeah, firstly, atrial fibrillation is the commonest significant rhythm disturbance of the heart. And basically what happens as we all get older, the thinner walled atria, which are the two holding chambers at the top that pump into the ventricles, the electrical tissue within the atria gets weaker and more frail and friable. And instead of just giving it a normal pump, the atrium starts quivering, and that's what we call atrial fibrillation. And you don't feel that. What you feel is the effect on the ventricles where they jump all over the place. Now, you might get atrial fibrillation where you have a slow ventricular response, so your heart might feel like it's going pretty normal, or it can go up to 180 beats a minute, sometimes even more than that. And 1% of people up to the age of 50 have had a clinical episode of atrial fibrillation, 5% 60, 10% 70, 20% 80. If we all lived to 150, and thank God we don't, but if we did, we'd all be in atrial fibrillation because the electrics would have worn out completely in the top chambers in the heart. Now, things can precipitate that, like any stressor, whether it be emotional stress, mental stress, physical stress, pharmacologic stress. I had a 35-year-old guy who, in the space of an hour, had three double-shot cappuccinos and sent his heart into overdrive, severe atrial fibrillation. Or infective stress, you get a bad dose of COVID or influenza or pneumonia, that can inflame the heart, inflame the electrics, put you into atrial fibrillation. So with atrial fibrillation, it's either paroxysmal, where it occurs every now and then, or more recurrent atrial fibrillation, where you might get an episode once a week, or chronic atrial fibrillation, where you're in it all the time. So the management of the three conditions is completely different. If, say, you had an episode of atrial fibrillation every couple of years, what I tend to do is give people very strong blood thinners. We've got some good blood thinners which are stronger than warfarin, but you don't need all the blood tests and the fiddling around that you do with warfarin. And I give them a drug called amiodarone to shock their heart back into a good rhythm without actually having to do an electric shock. And I do that for a short period of time to get them back in a good rhythm and then maybe put them on some maintenance treatment. But if it's very infrequent, you might be able to get them off all medications. But once people start getting recurrent atrial fibrillation, they need to be kept in a good rhythm as much as possible. So I use stronger pills, but not amiodarone because it's too strong to be using for a long time, and always blood thinners. So especially if you're over the age of about 65 and you've had quite a few bouts of atrial fibrillation, the risk of a stroke, because you're not flushing the blood through, is quite high, so you must be on a strong blood thinner. And also to be on a preventative antiarrhythmic to keep you in a good rhythm. But we now have a treatment called ablation, where you can go through the groin, go through the vein in the groin, go up to the heart. It's a long procedure. Sometimes it can take up to 3 hours of general anesthesia, burning bits of the heart to stop the fibrillation happening. And that's quite successful and certainly should be considered for people below the age of about 70. Once you get above 70, it is a three-hour general anaesthetic, which may increase your risk for dementia, prolonged anaesthesia, so you don't want to do it unless it's absolutely necessary. So I tend to reserve ablation for people where the drugs don't work or cause side effects, or they're younger. And then really, as someone gets much older, if they have chronic atrial fibrillation and they're in their 80s or 90s, you can leave them on strong blood thinners and maybe even put in a pacemaker so that the pacemaker takes over the electrical work of the heart. So there's a quick, rapid summary of atrial fibrillation.
The numbers as you get older get higher. Is there anything you can do, to stop this?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
What can you do?
One of the great links with atrial fibrillation is obesity.
Right.
And the more weight people carry, the more atrial fibrillation they have. And I've had a few people, because a lot of people find this very difficult, who have lost a bucket of weight and their atrial fibrillation goes away. So if you're really that concerned, lose weight and keep your grog down. Because if you, so there's a thing with, Brent, it's interesting, called the holiday heart syndrome.
Yeah.
Because when we go on holidays, I'm not suggesting I did this, Brent, of course, but when you go on holidays, you tend to consume a bit more alcohol than you don't at home, than
you
don't consume at home.
You do.
And often we'd see people who've gone on holidays and then they have four or five drinks and they might only have one or two drinks and bang, they go into atrial fibrillation that evening. So keep your grog down, keep your stresses down, keep your weight down. Don't smoke. Certainly avoid illegal drugs. Have a snort of cocaine, it'll whack you into atrial fibrillation, I can tell you. So any stimulant can put you into atrial fibrillation, but as can screaming at your next door neighbour. So you just want to minimise the stresses in your life.
And do you know you've had an episode if it's just a one-off?
Oh, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. In fact, if you monitored your or my heart, because you and I are around the same age, for a week, you'd probably find tiny little runs of atrial fibrillation in all of us. But it's when you have a clinical episode where you suddenly feel your heart jumping out of your chest and you drop your blood pressure and feel short of breath and a bit of tight in the chest, that's a typical manifestation of atrial fibrillation. It's when you start getting those sort of episodes when you have to get very serious about it.
Okay. Thank you for that. James says, I'm 62, pretty fit, do lots of cross training,
yep.
Weigh 57 kilos, did a calcium score test yesterday.
Yep.
Results came back saying 323.
Yep.
My doctor wants to send me to a cardiologist.
Yep.
Can you ask Dr. Walker, am I in the higher risks stage? I don't smoke, hardly drink,
yeah.
Do hot yoga for 11 years now, yep. 5 or 6 classes a week. My doctor said he didn't expect that score.
No, the doctor really should be expecting scores low, because all heart disease is genetic. It has nothing to do with your lifestyle. So if you foolishly pick the wrong relatives who give you lousy genes, no matter how well you look after yourself, you can still get muck in your arteries. And I always say the worst calcium score I've had, I told you this story, but it's an interesting one to repeat, is a 68-year-old man in the fitness industry, doesn't have an ounce of body fat, has a normal cholesterol, blood pressure, never smoked, not diabetic, and no family history. But he has in his bloodstream a thing called lipoprotein little a, which I've been measuring for 25 years, and you'd be shocked, Brett, last night on the Channel 9 News, they said, oh, there's a new blood test for cholesterol called lipoprotein little a that causes 20% of heart disease. Really? So anyhow, this guy, this 68-year-old, has had a high lipoprotein little a, and I've known about it because I've looked after him for the last 6 years. His calcium score was 8,500.
What?
8,500. And he's had bypass surgery and he's doing fine. He sent me an email about a year ago with a picture of him and his mates winning their latest basketball grand final. But what I'm saying is, had he been a profligate self-abuser, and had the emailer who emailed you that story been a profligate self-abuser, he probably would have dropped dead in his 40s from heart disease. But because he's looked after himself for so well, he's warded off the clinical episodes. He just has the potential problem of calcium in his arteries from pure genetics. He needs to have his lipoprotein little a measured. He needs to keep his lifestyle going. He certainly needs to see the cardiologist, have a stress echo. He needs to be on a statin to lower his cholesterol. He needs to be on low-dose aspirin, because he is at high risk without management. But with management, there's no reason why he can't live for another 44 years.
Okay. Now, Joanne says, and I can bring my wife in on this one too, Ross.
Yep.
Joanne says, I was finally able to convince my GP. I was finally able to convince
yep.
my GP to give me a referral for a coronary calcium score test.
Yep.
He gave me a referral for a CT angiogram instead. I asked again and explained why I wanted it. Look, the good news is for Joanne's calcium score test, coronary calcium score, it was zero. She
yep.
said she was happy with those results,
yep.
but she's having problems with her blood pressure. It's bouncing all over the place.
Okay, let's go back to the start. Can I say to you, 99.999% repeater of the general public have no understanding of cholesterol, blood pressure, heart disease, calcium scoring, how it all fits in, nor should you. It's not your job. But tragically, 99.9% of the medical profession have no understanding either. And think that a calcium score is the same thing as a CT angiogram. They're totally different tests done on the same technology. One involves squirting an intravenous dye into your arm, which can damage the kidneys. You can have an anaphylactic reaction to it. Typically involves much more radiation and also makes your wallet at least $500 lighter. And it is not a screening test for heart disease. There is not one study in the peer-reviewed literature showing any benefit of CT angiography over calcium scoring as a predictor for heart disease risk. But the rubbish argument used by some of my colleagues here is that, oh, no, but occasionally you see someone with a zero score who's got a high-grade block. Yeah, occasionally you do. But for the other 999 people, you don't. You're doing these unnecessary tests that have no real validity. So the calcium score is all you need. That's number one. But let me also say, you can have a zero calcium score and your blood pressure can be off the scale and it can still pop a hole in your head, it can still cause a stroke, it can still send you into atrial fibrillation, damage your kidneys, put you into heart failure. So blood pressure is always bad news and always needs to be treated, whereas cholesterol is not always bad news and doesn't always need to be treated. What you need with cholesterol is to know whether your calcium score is zero or low, but with blood pressure, what you need to know is that your blood pressure is sitting around 120 on 80 most of the time, because that's what you ought to aim for. And if it's not, you need, firstly, the lifestyle changes. You need the things like the Bergamet that I talk about all the time that I have the association with, Neutralife Kyolic Aged Garlic Extracts, another one, two of those in the morning. But also you need to have pills and you need to have your blood pressure managed, which is the most important thing, is to get that blood pressure to 120 on 80, regardless of any other assessments.
My wife experienced the same thing as Joanne, only what concerned me was if these x-ray places that she rang to try and book a coronary calcium score, they didn't know about it. I mean, for example, one of the places that she rang didn't know about it. In the end, yes, they do that test. Mm. And I thought, if someone doesn't know that they do the test, I mean, do they know what they're scoring once they've done the test? I mean, or is there concern that they may tell you you've got a score of 10, but they don't really know what they're looking at?
Well, look, most people do know what's going on here. I've got to say, I introduced calcium scoring into Australia in 1999. That's 21 years ago, and there is this saying that science advances funeral by funeral, and unfortunately that is true, but you would have thought that most people, including people who are doing the test, would have caught up with the technology by now, and most people do, and most people do provide a good, responsible service in this and understand the difference between calcium scoring and CT angiography, but it's been something that I've been rabbiting on about for the last 21 years, and eventually the message is getting through. And also, for everyone listening, you're in charge of your health, not your doctor. Your doctor is your advisor, and you have. And in terms of your life, you put all these experts around you who give you advice. But in the end, you've got to be the major advocate for your health. Doctors should just be servants and advisors to you, and that's all they should be. And so if you listen to what I say and say, oh, look, this Walker guy seems to be making some sense, you decide whether you want a calcium score or not. And look, what I'm saying could be a load of codswallop. I don't think it is, and most people listen to me don't think it is, but some of my colleagues disagree with what I say. And that's called life. In life, you can have the world experts so the two best world experts on a topic arguing tooth and nail that the other guy's wrong. And so in the end, it's got to be what your gut feeling and your intelligence from your reading and your understanding of things tells you what you should be doing. And I think I've presented a rather cogent case as to why we should all be having coronary calcium scoring, males at 50, females at 60, and not the CT angiography unless there is a good indication. Let me give you an indication for CT angiography. Just say you went to a cardiologist with a bit of chest pain and he did a stress echo on you, which was a bit equivocal. That's the time to have a CT angiogram, because you're probably not bad enough to need a full-blown angiogram where they go in through the wrist or the groin, but you will get some extra information because of the chest pain.
May I say to people who are in the Hunter, we've done the research, Joanne did the research, my wife did a bit more, there is a pathology place in High Street, Maitland. They know all about the coronary calcium score test and you'll pay $150 for it.
Yeah, that's the right price, and it's a radiology place, not a pathology place.
That's exactly right. Yep. Sorry, radiology. Yep. Okay, there you go. That's some questions answered by Dr. Ross. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little more to Dr. Ross Walker next.